Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hi, this is David Maister, and this is Lessons I've Learned. In this particular series, we will talk about how to develop your business through marketing, client service, and client relationships. In this, the 11th of the series of 14 podcasts, we will talk about how you go about generating leads and inquiries from non-clients. This episode is called Attracting New Clients and is about generating inquiries from prospects or non-clients. In previous episodes, we've explored marketing to existing clients. Now the time has come to really focus in on generating inquiries from non-clients. The list of possible marketing tactics that a firm can use to attract new clients is in fact an old familiar list. It's also a long list, but one to which solid priorities can be assigned. The main goal of all marketing tactics should be to get away as soon as possible from broadcasting a general message to a wide audience to a highly individualized face-to-face dialogue between an individual prospect and an individual professional. The essence of getting hired is getting a specific individual client to talk to you about his or her problems. And the sooner you can commence this one-to-one dialogue, the better is the tactic. Professional services are not a mass business. Clients are acquired one at a time, and any marketing program must reflect this. Marketing must also be a seduction, not an assault. It must not scream, "Hire me," but must gently suggest, "Here is some concrete evidence as why you may want to come the next step to get to know me better." Marketing is truly about attracting clients, doing something that causes them to want to take the next step. It's like dating, it's like a seduction. You want the client to be willing to come the next small step to join you in a relationship, and you mustn't rush too fast. Since all clients are skeptical, they need to be given a good reason to expose their problems to you, and they need to be reassured that if they respond to your initial contact, they are not committing themselves to go all the way. The marketing tactics that best meet these tests are small-scale seminars, articles, speeches, and what I'll call proprietary research. What all four have in common is the fact that they all involve giving something to the prospective clients: new facts, new knowledge, new ideas. They pass the test of trying to capture the market's attention by demonstrating your usefulness, not just asserting it. Seminars top the list of effective tactics, but only if done correctly. Some key guidelines must be followed. Since the goal of marketing is to try and launch individualized dialogues, a seminar must never be more than 25 prospective people. If you want to reach 200 people, do it 8 times. Now, I should say, of course, there is a role for the big ballroom-scale seminar, but notice that's general public relations. It doesn't do much to generate a lot of revenue. The best form of seminars, as I'll try and show, is the small scale. That to maintain the personalized intimacy, the ratio of prospects who attend to members of your firm is never more than about 5 to 1. As soon as you know which prospects are going to attend, and you may need to invite 300 to get 25, you instruct your research staff, which may of course be yourself, to conduct the most thorough research job possible on each person attending. Don't be hesitant in investing your time here. The goal should be to get all there is to know on this company and even the person attending that is knowable from the public domain. In today's web world, this is a lot easier than it used to be. Call their industry association, get their financial filings, call the Wall Street analysts that cover their industry, call even their public affairs department to get their product brochures. In short, if it's available, get it. And since you may be too busy to read large volumes, if you do have a research staff, get them to abstract it all down to an 8-page briefing booklet on what we need to know about that prospective client. The seating at the seminar will not be random. A specific person will sit with 5 specific prospective clients on whom she or he has received a briefing booklet. Now the individual professional can begin the conversation with, "As soon as we knew you were coming, we tried to do our homework. We noticed that, for example, you have this level of quote activity, or you've launched 3 new products, or your key ratios seem different from your competitors. That must be challenging. How are you dealing with the consequences?" With this opening, something important has been accomplished. By giving direct evidence of having done your homework, You have given the client evidence on which to form some preliminary impressions about you. The prospect will begin to suspect that you are disciplined and organized, thorough and do your homework before meetings, enterprising, willing to invest to earn relationships, interested in his or her specific business, and interested in him or her and not treating them just like one more cold call. In short, that you're a professional. Already you have distinguished yourself from the way most firms go about trying to win business, and the seminar hasn't even yet to begin. When it does begin, the seminar presenter should speak for no more than 20 to 30 minutes and then should suggest that everyone have small table discussions. Note, the speaker does not say any questions. The goal is to get the conversation away from the 25-to-1 in the mass conversation towards the 5-to-1 intimate discussion where people are more likely to open up and join the conversation. Your colleagues sitting at each table can now say, well, the 20 minutes we've just heard, was that your issue? And if the prospect sitting at your table says, no, that wasn't my concern, you can say, well, what is your concern? And now we have the client talking about his business, which of course is the key to all business getting. The seminar proceeds in this fashion. 20-minute presentations, 20-minute small table discussions, back to the speaker. From the client attendee's point of view, such a seminar maximizes the chance that he or she can raise their own specific issues in a comfortable fashion without having to ask about them publicly in front of 25 people, or even worse, 200. The follow-up to the seminar, the next step in the seduction, should now be comfortable. You can call those who sat at the same table as you and say, you and I spent the morning talking about the issues in your business. You said that the seminar didn't cover some of the issues that you're interested in, so I've been back to the office and I've researched them, and I found some things, and I'd like to come by and show you my findings. Now, that sort of follow-up call is a lot more comfortable to do and usually more welcomed by the prospective client because you are customizing your comments and not wasting his or her time. Notice what the follow-up is to those ballroom-scale seminars where somebody says, you don't recognize me, but I sat across the opposite side of the hotel ballroom and I'd like to come by and tell you more about our fine firm. That kind of follow-up is awful to do and is rarely accepted. The second of the marketing tactics that I'd recommend to you to generate leads is to give ideas to prospective clients through speeches at client industry meetings, chambers of commerce, and other forums where prospective clients gather. The goal of an effective speech is not to impress the whole audience in case they might ever need your services. That's nice PR, but it doesn't produce much revenue. Your main task in a speech is to make the handful of prospective clients somewhere in that audience who have need of your services today want to contact you afterwards to learn more. One tactic to make this happen is to offer the organizers to hold a small roundtable discussion as a breakout discussion in the afternoon and eagerly seek out those where you are in competition with other sessions going on. The reason why that's powerful is that even if only a few people show up, it's a huge success because those people have voted with their feet to indicate that A, they are interested to follow up on your speech, and they're interested to learn more, and they're interested to talk to you. You do not measure your marketing success by the number of people who have contacted you. You measure it by screening out the people who are not going to hire you and getting as quickly as possible to the ones who are going to hire you. Another way to use speeches effectively is to refuse to hand out copies of your speech at the meeting, but suggest that anyone who's interested can get a copy of it by leaving their business card or sending you an email. A third is to hand out a brief questionnaire and tell the audience that anyone who would like the survey results should attach their card and you'll be happy to send them results. In all of these devices, you are screening out those who are poor prospects, those not interested even in taking one small step, so you can focus your marketing efforts and spend your time on those few who have expressed interest. What all these tactics have in common is the seduction principle, creating a situation where those who are maybe interested can, without commitment or threat, express the beginnings of interest. You make it easy for them to take the next step towards you without the fear that they will be bombarded with a sales pitch. It must not be forgotten that a speech is inevitably an opportunity not only to convey your content and your brilliance, but also what kind of professional you are. For example, someone who reads his or her speech comes across as insecure and uncertain and not in command of his or her subject matter. I think you should never use your script and you should never use notes. If at all possible, try for audience participation in the form of questions and answers as early as possible. Remember, the goal is not to get through your material, but to create a favorable impression that you can interact with clients and handle their questions. You want to demonstrate with your speech that you can think on your feet, you can handle unexpected questions, you are interested in listening as well as talking. All these things are characteristics that a client wants in an advisor. Use the speech to demonstrate that you have them. Although they may fail the tests of being face-to-face or customized, articles in client-oriented trade magazines and newspapers are a powerful means of demonstrating your competence without having to claim things. They allow you to show that you have something special to say that distinguishes you from the competition, and hence they're very effective in giving prospective clients a reason why they should talk with you. Articles written for your own professional and technical journals may bring in the professional glory, but it's articles in the client-oriented press that bring in the business. The power of articles derives from the multiple uses to which they may be put. Apart from the distribution they receive in their initial publication, they can be reprinted and handed out at speeches, seminars, and as a powerful substitute for ineffective brochures. How much more effective it is when a prospective client makes an inquiry to say, "Yes, we've written a few articles on that subject, let me send them to you." That's much better than saying, "Here's our brochure." The life of a well-written, reader-friendly article can be many, many years. Articles, of course, can have a credentializing effect. Since many, if not most, professionals don't write for the client press, what begins as an article as a subject can easily become the article. Over time, articles can be accumulated into a bound book, which, though less likely to be read from cover to cover, helps to create an image of being the firm that wrote the book on a given area of practice. Of course, that's exactly what was my strategy. Getting ideas for articles should rarely be a problem. Most effective articles are 2,000 to 4,000 words of the form, "If you have the following issue to address, here are the pros and cons of your major alternatives. Here are some things to take into account, and here are some lessons I've learned about the best way to proceed." By implication, though never explicitly, the article suggests, "If you'd like to hear more, call me." There must, of course, be enough substantive content to make the reader want to call. Now notice, if all you're writing about is, "Here is an issue, here are the alternatives, and here's what you might want to think about," that is nothing more than whatever you were doing in your last client assignment. You will get ideas of articles just from your practice. The power of articles is such that it would be wise to set a target of at least one article per year per professional. In fact, quite honestly, I think one per quarter is not unreasonable. In a medium to large firm, this would represent a significant amount of market exposure. The limitation is not in things to write about. The limitation is in the discipline, the act of writing. To address this barrier, many professional firms make available to their people freelance journalist ghostwriters who do the actual writing, subject to partners dictating and editing. There is nothing wrong with this approach. The fourth of the major first-team tactics is proprietary research. If the goal of marketing is to demonstrate that you have something to offer that your competitors do not, then conducting research on topics of interest to prospective clients is an obvious, if neglected, tool. Though discussed here last in my first team, research logically precedes the three main tactics of seminars, articles, and speeches. For each of these to be effective, you need to have special information. If you do have facts that clients can't get elsewhere, prospects will come to your seminar. If the planned content covers what any competitor could present, they are unlikely to come. If you've got facts that your competitors don't, they will read your articles and they will listen to your speeches with interest. Clients today are bombarded with articles, speeches, and seminars that contain generalities. Everyone knows what the best tactics are, but not all of these things distinguish the author or the presenter from any of his or her competent competitors. Research is needed to get the special information. What kind of special information can you collect that your competitors do not have? Obviously, it might be technical or professional, but it can be general survey research. Imagine, for example, that you conducted an opinion survey on the web of all the executives in a given industry and asked them to prioritize the trends they worry about most. List the tactics they make greatest use of, identify which devices they made use of, and so on. You're now in a position to report that X percent of executives in a given sector have tried Y, and Z percent think that these are the most threatening issues, etc. The information may not be very intellectual or technical or professional, but you will have created a set of facts that any client or prospect would love to obtain, since everybody wants to know how they compare to others. Ask yourself how often you've heard clients say, "Who else is doing this?" or "What are other companies doing?" or "How do we compare to other clients of yours?" A number of professional firms are very organized in this area and have used it to great effect. Some, for example, get client industry associations to sponsor and guide the research, creating two wonderful benefits. First, you get the coloring of official research, positioning your firm as a primary source of information for clients. And second, sometimes the industry association will underwrite part or all of the cost of the research. Apart from its support of articles, seminars, and speeches, research can also provide the substance for getting quoted in other public relations, although this is a lesser side benefit. Now, where do websites fit in all of this? I would suggest to you that websites are merely a modern technology in order to provide a vehicle for the things we've said before. Websites are wonderful places to put the articles you've written. They're wonderful places to put the videos of the seminars that you've given and all the handouts available. They are a wonderful place to report the proprietary research. In and of themselves, I don't think websites are the marketing tool, but they are the channel or the medium through which you can use the most powerful marketing tactics. And the test for the website is the same main test in what we've done so far, and that is, does it demonstrate your abilities to a new audience rather than just claim them? Let's now turn to what I call the second string tactics. In stressing the importance of seminars, articles, speeches, and research, I don't mean to imply that other marketing tactics do not work. They all work to a degree. Rather, the issue is one of effectiveness and return on investment. Which tactic should come first? This needs to be stressed as we turn to other tactics. So, for example, the next thing I think of is, even if I'm not scheduled to be a speaker at a client industry program, I would think of saying, let me go and attend client industry meetings so I can meet prospects and sit next to people and ask them about what they're hearing from the podium. If I can go and meet prospects on a one-to-one basis, that's probably the next best thing I could think of. Now, the rest of the second string tactics that I'd refer you to are very commonly discussed ones in professional environments. They're things like community activities and networking and getting to know certain indirect referral sources. So, for example, even if you're after a corporation's work, you may work at getting to know the bankers because they are third-party sources. Now, all of these networking approaches, about which you'll read a great deal, are in fact incredibly powerful, but they do suffer from one very big disadvantage, which is the input, the amount of time you have to spend in order to make them effective, is actually quite substantial. My brother-in-law, for example, is very active with his Rotary in the town in which he lives, and business does come from it, but he's been an active member of the Rotary Club for many, many years, in fact, measured in decades. And he reports to me that he often sees professionals who try and join in too obviously trying to get business immediately. And he tells me that people like that are spotted immediately and are rejected immediately. Networking and community activities and indirect referrals will work, but only if you're prepared to invest a significant amount of time. Therefore, for me, they slip down to a second string tactic purely on the grounds of return on investment. Finally, I need to turn to what I will consider the grasping for straws tactics. Getting quoted in the newspaper, newsletters, brochures, cold calls, direct mail, advertising. A lot of these things are traditional marketing activities, but I'll stand by my opinion, but these are things you do only when everything else has failed. These things are not really opportunities to demonstrate your capability and have too high a component of claiming that you are wonderful. I would recommend that you focus primarily on the things that work. Remember that what we said in this series of podcasts is that there are a lot of other things you've got to do in marketing besides generating leads from new clients. So when you come to that one category of generating new clients, attracting new clients, you don't have all of your time available for this category alone. You better choose the best tactics that are available within the category, and they are the ones I've tried to report to you. I'm David Maister, and this has been Lessons I've Learned.
This concludes another episode of David Maister's podcast series, Marketing Professional Services. Watch for the next series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors, beginning April 17th.